But we ended up with a network that allowed you to connect a computer to it. The computer could say which of the output wires, essentially, on that network you wanted the bits to go to. And when you put them in, it would say where they're going, and when they popped out, it would say where they came from. Mm-hmm. But it was all contained within one net. Mm-hmm. Now, if you wanted to have another network involved, there was no way within the constructs of the way the ARPANET worked or the host protocols worked that would let you identify a random machine in some other part of the world on some other network.
No way to make an internet.
Right. Not without the effort to recreate it.
Yeah.
Furthermore, the ARPANET had a number of very important features that were really useful for computing, namely, it was intended to get the data reliably to the other end.
Mm-hmm.
Just directly, you know. So if the data didn't get there, the basic assumption was something was broken. You know, so like, I mean, if you were going to print something on your printer and it didn't print, you'd assume there's something broken there. Whereas if you're in a more realistic communications environment, let's say with radio communications, you may not be communicating for some very good reasons that has nothing to do with something being broken. Mm-hmm. Like if you're in a tunnel, a radio wave is not likely to get to you unless they've taken steps to,
sure,
you know, radiate the signal in the tunnel. If you're behind a mountain, signal may not get through the mountain. You could be in an area where there's a lot of interference, you know, intentional or otherwise. So there are many reasons why, you know, in a, let's say a radio net, you just might not be able to communicate,
yeah,
but nothing's broken in the canonical sense of what that term,
yeah,
means. And so I knew we needed to have a different way of dealing with it. So we had to deal with the issue of unreliability along the way, and we had to deal with the issues of addressability. And those were two of the main issues that led to the reconceptualization of the protocols, and we called it TCP at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And later we took the part of it that dealt with the Internet Protocol and sort of broke it out and made a separate separate thing. That's where the name TCP/IP came from. So the IP part had to do with addressing the machines and having the networks route based on IP addresses.
Mm-hmm.
And the TCP part was sort of the end-to-end piece of the protocol that lets you put the things back together again.
Sure.
Because these nets could be all different. And one net might take big packets and the next one might want little ones. So they,
mm-hmm,
have to chop these packets into little pieces and separately address them. They may take different routes, and you'd have to figure out how to put them together and where the pieces go at the other end. And so that's what the protocol did. You might get duplicates, things could be retransmitted, they could come out of order, things could be missing. And so the protocol really was intended to deal with that. And there was a whole effort to really think that through as a kind of a logical framework for putting together networks independent of what the actual networks were.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the you know, the beauty of that original design was it seems to have accommodated virtually every kind of network that's come about since then and allowed it to be part of this federation of networks, because the architecture was not about the underlying net but about the means by which they could interact with each other.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it was a separate activity.